Hello and welcome to another episode of Healthy Minds. I'm Julie, your host, and I've got a special guest with me today. Can you introduce yourself?
Hi, everyone. My name is Heidi Griswold, and this is a crossover episode because I'm from another Dragon Digital Radio podcast, Transforming Together.
Yeah. Great. Can you talk to us a little bit about maybe like your job?
Oh, absolutely. Everyone doesn't listen to my podcast and automatically know who I am and what I do. Very confusing. So I work at HopeWorks of Howard County, which is Howard County's domestic violence, rape crisis, human trafficking response center and prevention center. So we do a variety of things. We have a 24-hour helpline for folks experiencing that type of violence. But I work on the prevention side. So we do our podcast. I do lots of workshops in the community on building healthy relationships and understanding and practicing consent and fabulous things like that.
Great. Thank you. So actually, you just had a workshop recently that is very similar to the topic we're talking about today. And so today we're going to be talking about how to cope with the holidays. Let's start with the basic. Why is it so stressful to be in the holiday season?
Oh, man. I think that's different for every person, but there's a lot of pressure and expectations that we place on what the holidays should be like. I mean, I know that was the case for me. I hosted Thanksgiving for the very first time this year.
Oh, fun.
Yeah. And on the whole, it was a really lovely experience. But I put so much pressure on myself for how I wanted it to be perfect and how it should look when I'm hosting for a holiday. And even though I have a really good relationship with my family members who were at my much smaller holiday gathering, I had a couple of breakdowns because I'm like, this has to be just right. Aww. And that's one thing. So that's pressure, whether it's internal or external. Mine was almost entirely internal, but sometimes it's extra. Sometimes it's pressure from other family members.
Right.
Sometimes you have family members who are really toxic for you, who you may only see once or twice a year. And that's kind of hard in its own way because you don't see them all year long. And then when you do see them, it's so intense.
Yeah.
It's like several days where maybe you don't have a way to get away from them. Or it's like a 6-hour dinner in a very small house. That's just a few. I mean, there's any other number of reasons why it could be difficult.
Right. And, you know, social media, of course, is always kind of a good thing, but also really negative sometimes for this comparing yourself to others and this mostly internal, but a little bit external pressure. I know right before this episode, you and I were chatting about like how I love Pinterest, but I like got into my head about like, I can't him make all my decorations, you know?
Right. It's like, well, if everyone else is able to do it, why am I not able to do it? And you have like no idea. Right. What other things are going in their life, why they might have time.
Right.
Maybe their one passion in life is making mini Christmas trees and they've worked on this all year long to have the perfect display.
Right. Yeah, that's fair. All right. Well, thank you. That's a good, that's a relief. Right?
Julie, whatever you put up, it's going to be beautiful.
Thank you. Thank you. So another reason, of course, finances, right?
Yeah, holiday shopping. I'm very lucky to have compassionate family members who are like, we know you don't have a lot of money right now. You can just knit us something. I'm like, thanks, Mom. Here's your 8th hat of the year. But I have another coworker who was like, just like, oh, yeah, it's my family is really wants really nice gifts every year. And I feel really stressed having to save up for them. Yeah. And or just even to travel, you know, if you're expected to travel home and if you don't get on that real early in the process to get your plane ticket, that's going to set you back a lot.
Yep.
Yeah. Just all those financial pressures, too. Absolutely.
Yeah. And I always like to talk about body image and, you know, the impact of like healthy eating or disordered eating around this time. And the holidays have like so many expectations around food and alcohol, which is in itself a fun thing to navigate if you're a healthy minded individual. But if you add some of these extra mental health conditions, it can be difficult.
Yeah. Or people making comments about what you're eating or your body size or which are just never OK. But I think one of the things we're going to talk more at length in the episode is it feels like even if there are things you would say something like if someone said something harmful to you, but like, look like you put on a little weight this year. You sure you want all those rolls or something like that?
I do. Thank you.
I do want the rolls, but I feel like I'm much more easy. It's easier for me to snap back at someone who is either an acquaintance or a friend. If they're my friend, they're not talking to me like that, or they're not my friend.
Right.
But you're not always able to, you don't always feel able to respond to family members in the same way for any number of reasons.
Yeah. And, you know, just a quick shout out to those that struggle with any sort of healthy boundaries around alcohol around this time of year. It is perfectly acceptable to run around with your ginger ale and call it something or run around with your water, you know, whatever it is. And stand strong. You've got this. We believe in you here.
You can bring your own beverage with you. You know? Yeah, absolutely.
Anniversaries and grief around this time of year.
Yeah. So that one resonates with me this year because this was the first Thanksgiving without my grandma, which is actually why I was hosting, because all my life she's hosted
yeah.
in St. Louis, and it was going to her family or her home mm-hmm. for Thanksgiving. And it was a much bigger Thanksgiving. It was not huge, but at least like 12 to 15 people. Yeah. And so this year we had to make a choice about what are we going to do for Thanksgiving? Because going to grandma's house isn't an option.
Yeah.
And that was an opportunity where my family got to make a choice around, there's some extended family in St. Louis who used to come to that gathering who are very toxic for me mm-hmm. and toxic for a few other members of our family. And so we got to make the choice that, you know what, actually, if we don't do it in St. Louis, then we don't have to right. have that conflict. It was a choice to make it much, much tighter because all five people were staying in my one bedroom apartment. it was an adventure, but it was a happy choice because we had a great time together. But it was also, there was grief that we were processing. And when we did the blessing for the meal, I also, because I was leading it, I made a point to acknowledge
yeah.
that loss and acknowledge that grandma's not here this year. And yeah. and there are people, like I know someone whose father passed away the week before Thanksgiving.
Yeah.
And you can't control things like that.
Right.
You know? And so it's, sometimes being together can help with that. Mm-hmm. And sometimes you just want to process grief on your own.
Yeah.
And it's challenging.
Yeah. And then I guess the final thing that I think everyone equivalents with holidays, if you're thinking about like, oh, I'm going back to hang out with my family, and you've just got that tiny moment of dread, no matter how much you love them, is the like, what are you doing with your life? Or what are you going to do after school? Or when are you going to get married?
Like, when are you going to give me grandkids?
Oh, yeah.
I don't get that one from my family, but I know people who do. Yeah.
I was going to say, every year, my boyfriend and I have been dating for 7 years, and his family just gave up hope on us last year.
No. Ow.
I know. Ow. So I was like, oh, I'm not asked that. And then I was like, oh, wait, I'm not asked that. And I couldn't decide how I felt about that question.
Yikes.
So, you know. Yeah, family is fun, but it also can be extremely challenging.
Yeah, even if you love your family and get along great with your family, it's draining. It can be draining to be around that many people for so long in that right. kind of intense way.
Right.
Yeah.
Especially our lovely introverts out there. Yeah. So we've mentioned like toxic family members. So I love this question. How do you know when someone is toxic or unhealthy for you?
Yeah. So one of the things we talk about in the context of abusive partner relationships mm-hmm. is looking at patterns mm-hmm. and an abusive relationship isn't something that just happens once and it's a harmful incident. It's right. something that happens repeatedly. It often happens in cycles where someone will do something really harmful and then they'll apologize mm-hmm. and they'll say, oh my God, I'm so sorry, babe. You know, I love you. I never meant to do that. Right. They'll buy you flowers and mm-hmm. then there'll be a period that's kind of like a repeat of the honeymoon period mm-hmm. and then tension will build again. And that's not always how it works in intimate partner violence relationships, but the cycle is often present. And I feel like cycles are often present with toxic family members mm-hmm. as well. And that period where they apologize or where they're so lovely to you makes it a lot harder to sometimes notice the patterns mm, or mm-hmm. to really hold them to task
yeah.
for the patterns and say, yeah. hey, this keeps happening again and again.
Mm-hmm.
And your behavior hasn't changed, even though you've apologized. So it's not really an apology if your behavior's not changing.
Right.
So that's one thing. But it also just comes down to how it feels in your gut. And if you notice that every time you spend time with this person, you walk away feeling crappy more often than you walk away feeling good. Mm-hmm. And it's tough with family because even if it's hard, you can cut a partner out of your life. You can cut a friend out of your life mm-hmm. and you can cut family members out of your mm-hmm. life if they're toxic. But it's harder for a lot of different reasons. There's a lot of mm-hmm. social pressure about yep. sticking with your family and being with your family. And if you leave your family, then who's going to be there for you?
Yeah.
But so, yeah, choosing to weigh what that relationship is for you mm-hmm. versus how that's making you feel now in the day-to-day. You can also take a break from family. It doesn't have to be forever.
Right.
Yeah.
So I don't know if I have any Redditors out there, but there's some really great subreddits around like relationship. And then there's one that I like to read just because I'm nosy. It's called Raised by Narcissists. And I find that super fascinating. So they talk about being no contact or very low contact. And those are acceptable boundaries to set with your family, even yeah. though that, what's the stupid saying that always makes my hackles go up, blood is thicker than water, right? And they mean that's wrong.
Right, but there's a second part to that. I just read it yesterday, but there's
it essentially means blood of the covenant. So it's like your friendships, or in this case it's a Christian saying, so it's meant to be like the people that you have broke bread with essentially
right.
is thicker than those, you know, that you just are bound to by the womb water. Gross.
Right.
I know. Everybody.
Icky. Okay. I mean, and birth is not icky, but like
right.
I wasn't expecting that.
So apologies if you were taken aback, but birth is not gross. Correct. So essentially that saying is all wrong. So I encourage you guys to fire that back if your family member gives you this obnoxious saying. But, you know, it's hard And I've cut someone out of my life that is a family member, and I get crap from my other family members, from my friends. People make just really flippant comments and they don't understand everything. And I'm not going to tell them everything because it's not their business. And, you know, it's just funny to see what people will say to you with no information. So, yeah. Mind your own business a little bit, please, too. Thank you. Right. Oh, so something I like to talk about with toxic relationships is a theory that I've stolen from another theory called eco mapping, where you sit down, you put yourself in the middle of this bubble you're drawing, you write down like all the relationships you have and places you live and where you work and things you like to do. And then you draw an arrow to or from the activity and say where the energy goes. So is this something I give my energy to? For instance, work, typically you give your energy to work. Your significant other, hopefully, it is a two arrow situation where it goes to the significant other and comes back. So it's a balanced relationship.
Balance of power, balance of energy.
Right. Yeah. And, you know, maybe a couple of days or weeks, it's more heavily you're giving, but you know that it comes back, if that makes sense. And so I like to think about that in terms of toxic relationships. If it's always going away and it's not like your child or a dependent or something.
Right.
You know, knowing that you always give away is a really impactful tool to use as well in determining like how you want to handle the relationship. Like if it's something you can't opt out of, knowing that I'm always going to be drained or tired or cranky or whatever after I interact with this family member reminds me to fill my cup back up with something that does give back to me.
Yeah, I love that idea. I think it's a really fantastic tool that people could use.
Yeah. And so those of you that are listening that are in college, we recognize not all of you will be able to like totally opt out of family relationships, even if you're an adult, of course, and they might have financial power. You might have the cultural implications of your family being a much tighter unit, or, you know, there's a whole lot of reasons that you wouldn't be able to opt out.
But what you can do, like you were saying, is if you know that you're going to have to do this, you can prepare.
Yeah.
So what's something that you can do for yourself before, during, and after the interaction to kind of stay in your zone? I think it's hard because even if you have self-care things that work for you that you know that you can fall in the past, you can't always use those same self-care tools around the holidays, whether it's because you're not in your own home space, you have to be back at your parents' place or whatever, or you can't really be in control of your time. You're not like, it wouldn't be acceptable for you to go on like a 2-hour bike ride or whatever it is that's good for you. So kind of planning a kind of emergency self-care plan in advance can be really helpful. Like I can't go on a bike ride, but maybe there's a fidget toy that I can play with under the table or something so that I can like, I literally do that.
Yeah. So. No. I was laughing because I like to always have something in my hands. So I'll like sit there. I'll be the clicker in the back of things or I try to like play with like, you know, the edge of my shirt or something. So it's not quite as noisy. But so that brings us into our next, like, what can we do to prep in advance of holidays? So having a fidget, of course. And I'll just quickly say from my work before working with the 16 to 25 year olds with mental health issues is that I know that I tend to get in my head and make things a lot worse than they actually are. So I'll be like, oh, no, I have to do this paper, for instance, you know, and so I sit there and I dread it and I work myself up about it a little bit. And then when I start writing and I'm like, oh, yeah, I don't. This isn't so bad. And we recognize holidays can be hard and we're not saying, oh, this isn't so bad. But you might accidentally be working up or exaggerating some of the quality. So just try to keep that in mind when you start to ramp up a little bit.
Yeah. And you can't always be in control of your anxieties.
Sure.
But if you can kind of take notice of like, I noticed that I'm making myself very, very concerned about this. Maybe it will be that way. But even just like the saying it out loud can help.
Yeah.
Yeah.
The being mindful is really important with anxiety. And anxiety is a valid feeling. Like everybody gets it. And, you know, for instance, I am experiencing a tiny bit of anxiety about the holidays this year because we've got so many different places to go. And I'm sitting there like, I just want half a day to watch my Hallmark Christmas movies and like have some hot chocolate or something. So I recognize that and I try to remind myself that I can either it's okay to have it or I'm like, let's think about something else now.
Or you can make a plan for that. Like you can be like, I know I can't do that on Christmas Day because I have to go 5 different places, but December 27th is going to be Julie Christmas or whatever.
Right. Let's watch all the trashy Hallmark movies.
All day long.
Yeah. That's part of my self-care, in case you haven't noticed that yet. Yeah. Okay. So what are some other ways that we can prep for holidays?
Yeah. So I think you talked about people who give you energy as opposed to people who take it away. You can check in with those people and say, hey, when are you going to be free? Mm-hmm. Either during the day on the holiday or before or after. And is it okay if I text you or is it okay if I call you? Or also checking in with their boundaries because it's not fair to that person if you're having a really crappy day to just dump on them, because then it's that one way relationship, right? But you can ask them, hey, what would it be okay? How would it be okay for me to contact you? Or if not, maybe you can set up a, like, if you know it's going to be busy all day for you, it's like, can we plan on FaceTiming at 10 p.m. or something? So at least you can kind of let it out before you go to bed.
Right. And, you know, if you have the option to stay somewhere else, if you're financially able to, you've got really amazing friends, and you know that, like, being under your parents' roof is kind of just drive you up a wall, please hang out with your friends. We actually have a group of friends that moved to another state, and they're coming and staying with us through the holidays this year, which is kind of fun for me.
Yeah.
But they recognize that they can't stay in the parents' house because it gives them so much anxiety. But they're still going to spend time with them. Like, they're hardly going to be at our house. They're basically just sleeping in our house. I think that it's great that they're able to do that. And I'm, like, really excited they're coming. But I also keep that in mind when I go. Like, I plan to spend time with my grandparents, but I don't really stay overnight anymore because, you know, that causes me stress. As much as I love them, I like to be in my own bed, and I like to, you know, wear my jammies and walk around and like all that stuff. So, you know, try to plan ahead and see what you can do. You know, maybe you go for the day. Maybe you go for the morning. Maybe you pop in.
And it's okay to set those boundaries for yourself.
Mm-hmm.
It's okay to say, this is what I'm able to do.
Yeah.
And then just do that and stick to it and have a plan. You can even, like, make up a fake somewhere you have to be after for, like, cut up time. It's like, I'm sorry, I told my best friend I'd step in for her holiday thing, and that starts at 6.
Yep.
Your friend might not be available all day, but you can also plan, can back it up. Oh, sorry, Katie's texting me about, oh, I really have to be there for her. Oh, bye.
The sing along.
Right, exactly. Exactly.
If any of you need a new friend, please feel free to drop my name, Julie, right? You can be like, oh, Julie's got this really cool thing going on. I gotta go, right?
Well, in terms of planning things to say, you can also think about those questions that you're going to be asked that you're concerned about. Or think about, you know, that your one uncle always says really kind of harmful political things to you or something. You can, I mean, there's some ways that it's going to be hard to deal with that, and we're going to talk about ways to choose or not choose to deal with that, but you can plan some things to say. It's not always going to work out, but if it's someone's asking you, so when are you going to have grandkids or whatever, you can I don't know what would be your response. It's like, actually, my cat is doing amazing, and you can, like, plan to talk about that. Or you can be kind of funny with it, if that's your sense of humor. Or you can be like, well, actually, I haven't been thinking about that, but what I have been thinking about is, and then pick whatever you're passionate about right now. Or even, like, again, if you don't have any good examples in your life, literally steal one of your friends' life stories.
Yeah.
Like, ask them first. But, like, you can, like, is it okay if I, like, pretend that I'm you and I'm doing this thing? Because, like, your family member, if it's a distant family member, they probably won't be able to follow up. You'd be like, oh, yeah, I'm totally really into
quilting.
What's that?
Oh, it's paper. You turn it and it makes really pretty shapes.
Great.
Yeah.
Great. And you can, like, hey, Julie, text me your quilling picture so I can pretend they're mine and show this family member so they'll leave me alone and stop asking about offspring. It can be a plan.
Yeah. And, you know, I made the joke earlier that my boyfriend's family, quote unquote, gave up on us with the kids. But it's because I spent some time talking about how much we love our fur babies. So,
there you go.
There's hope. It took 6 years, but
if you can convince your in-laws to start calling them grand kitties or grand puppies, you're well on the way.
So funny. Yeah. I love those magnets. So it's like, I heart my grand puppy. I always crack up when I see them on the cars.
Fantastic. Fantastic.
Yeah. So just gift them a lot of, like, grand puppy things, I guess, for the holidays. Here you go, right? Okay, so we talked about, like, deflecting, like, in the moment. So it's Christmas Day, it's Hanukkah, it's whatever, it's New Year's, whatever holiday you're celebrating with your family. So let's talk about how we deal with this uncle that's bugging us, or, you know, well-meaning grandparents, or, you know, whatever.
So one of the things that we focused on in the workshop I did is how you can respond when someone says something harmful. Likely when you're with a big group of family, not everyone's going to be on the same political page, or there's going to be some people who are very religious in a very different way than you might be, or you might not be religious at all, and something's going to come up. It feels like you're almost waiting for the shoe to drop.
Right.
When you're just like, when is someone going to say something racist or homophobic or transphobic or misgender me? And it can be very hard in that moment because you know what your morals and your values are, and you really want to say something and you want to say that's not okay, but it can be hard to gauge how and what's the best way to respond.
Right.
And so I want to offer a couple tools for folks. There's a great resource online called Toolkit for Interrupting Oppression from the Oregon Coalition Against Domestic and Sexual Violence. You can download the whole thing, and it's got like 14 pages of fantastic information. One of the first things they do is suggest that you check in with yourself. So Do I feel safe in the moment?
Right.
If I choose to interrupt now, do I have the resilience to do so? Like if I interrupt, is that going to just destroy me for the rest of the day?
Right.
You know, and interrupting also, I'm going to use the word interrupting a lot in the next few minutes. And it doesn't mean literally cutting someone off mid-sentence.
Right.
It just means disrupting harmful behavior.
Right.
So it can be after they're done speaking and then you say, that's messed up, Uncle Bobby. But okay. Whatever it is.
Yeah.
Do you think the other person is in a place to listen?
Right. So important.
And if they're not, and if they aren't, that maybe it means that you're addressing the room rather than addressing that one person.
Yeah.
And if you interrupt, will it be literally physically safe? Because I know I have an uncle who I can't speak up to because I'm concerned about him being physically violent, you know? Mm-hmm. And that's different from I'm worried that the other person might hurt my feelings, which is still really valid.
Right.
And your emotional safety is really valid, but like gauging, what is the difference between discomfort and not feeling safe?
Right.
Because all of these things are going to be uncomfortable.
Yes.
But you have to, if you want to choose to interrupt harmful behavior, you have to choose to lean into discomfort.
Yeah.
So another thing you can think about is when you want to respond to someone, because sometimes it can feel like a lot of pressure on yourself. Like I have to come up with something to say right now in the moment. And sometimes if you have something that you think you can say in the moment can be a great time, but also depending on the person and depending on you, it can be more effective to kind of get them alone later or even in a smaller group where it's you and one or two people who support you and not in a confrontational, like the three of us have teamed up to come tell you how wrong you are.
Right.
But in just kind of a more one-on-one way, because then, first of all, you've had time to take care of yourself. And if it's a comment, for example, that really harms you, like if you're gay and your uncle said something really homophobic, I know my hackles go up. I'm like on guard. I'm feeling attacked in that moment, even if he doesn't know I'm gay or wasn't talking to me. So when you've calmed down and when they're not in front of their audience to say these awful things, can be a better time. Or it's okay to wait until much later. You could send an email, or you could instead, if it's not safe to talk to that person, you can choose to do another thing that makes you feel more related to that cause. So you could call a senator, or you could send a letter, or do something else that makes you feel like you're doing something.
Yeah. And something you said earlier was giving someone a chance to respond. So one off, we all make mistakes, right? And theirs might be extremely distasteful or uncomfortable, where they've made perhaps one homophobic comment, or they're bringing up some really heated political things, or they ask you that gosh darn question about grandkids again, and you're just like, rah, right? Because you've had a day, you've had a week, you're really like on, you're sensitive. So if you tell someone that, you know, they're toxic because they've made one comment, they could be, but you need to also, if you can, if it's safe, allow them a chance to recognize their behavior, and the difference being this pattern, right? So one comment versus the last 10 years, or, you know, even this past year.
And if you have a relationship with this person that you feel is worth and valuable to maintain, or you see that there is some capacity for change in that person, we also don't know what we don't know. So there are definitely people in families, in my family, who are saying racist things and have some inkling that they know what they're saying is messed up, or they're trying to provoke other people.
Yeah.
Those people are a lot harder to deal with. And in those situations, if you want to say something, it's maybe best to say something that addresses the whole room, especially I think if there's if you're an adult and there's children in the room, you want to make sure the children know that behavior is not okay. And so it'd be something like, please don't say things like that at my holiday table. That is racist. Or like, if you're not the host, if you're someone who's not in a position of power in that, that's something you can plan for. If you know who the host is, if the host is your aunt who you know is like more on your side politically but may not speak up on her own, can you like say, hey, Aunt Sally, we know that Aunt Bobby does, or Uncle Bobby does this. Can we, maybe both the Bobbies, Roberta and Robert, and they both suck. Right. Okay. let's team up against the Bobbies this year. What can we do? And so that's one possibility. But if there's a person you want to maintain relationship with, there's another tool that I will offer. And this is from an article called Responding to Racist Talk at Family Gatherings by Rinku Sen. And she suggests first that checking in with yourself step. So how are you doing? Do you feel safe to respond? Choosing whether you want to talk to them now or later. And then when you're one-on-one with the person, the first thing you do is ask them questions. So it's like, so I'm curious why you say that. Or it seems like you might be really nervous about something that's happening in our country. Can you tell me where that feeling's coming from?
Yeah.
And if you don't let them talk and you're just coming at them with, this is why you're wrong, you're not going to get anywhere. It's just going to become that clashing and that headbutting. Or if they're making a joke, you can ask, can you tell me why that's funny? I don't really get it. That one's sassy. I love doing this. Someone says something like, kind of, I'm like, I don't get it. Can you explain it to me? And then watching them
right
is bringing me great joy.
Wait. That's an awful thing that I just said. Oh, darn.
But even if not, like, there's some reason why they're saying the thing they're saying.
Right.
And it could be that their reasons also are harmful to you and it may not be worth going further. But if you don't ask them, you won't know.
Mm-hmm.
And then kind of recapping their position. So like, okay, it sounds like you think this because of this. Did I get that right? So showing that you were actually listening and understanding and not just making things up. And then find a way to connect with them. So it's like, okay, well, I'm really concerned about some things that are going on in the world too. And I love you, or and I enjoy seeing you, or whatever. Just find a way to connect that's genuine so that you're not two separate entities. And then state the impact that whatever they said has on you and on the world. So you can clarify your position, but make it more personal. So it's like, when you said that movie looked really gay, that was actually really harmful for me. And you don't even have to say, if you're gay, you don't have to say so. It's like, because I have lots of gay friends, and it sounds like you're saying something like that about their identity is inherently harmful.
Yeah.
And I think that has an impact on the whole world as well, because that builds a climate where people are afraid to come out, and it makes it a lot easier for kids who are gay to be suicidal because they feel like their identity is invalid or it's not safe to talk to people.
Right.
And then you can say what you want from them instead. So I would prefer if at family gatherings, you refrain from using the word gay in a derogatory way.
Right.
Is that okay? And that might not work, but that's at least some steps that have a little bit more of an opportunity for the person to not walk away feeling attacked.
Right.
And for there to be room for change. Mm-hmm. And sometimes that's just not going to work. And you just have to state your disagreement and say, like, that's wrong. And that's not the type of conversation that we have in this family.
Yeah.
But if there's a window, I encourage you to take it, because if you don't take it, things aren't going to change.
Right. And maybe you're as verbose and wonderful at words as Heidi here, but if you're not, but you're like me and you need a second to think, I would highly recommend that you send that email later, you know, and say like, hey, Uncle Aunt Poppy, I am so very sad that we had that conversation. And then you're able to kind of put it much better like Heidi did there.
Or you can take a bathroom break before the conversation and type up some notes on your phone. Like, that's okay. It's like, and you can say, hey, I just wrote some stuff down because this is really important to me and I want to make sure I get it right.
Yeah. So going back to that toolkit we had for the interruption thing.
Yeah.
Really quick. So if you have the chance, I highly recommend you all look at it because there's just some wonderful phrases. I love having a jumping point. So, you know, there's some here that's like, that sounds like victim blaming, or I've noticed you use the word ladies when we meet as a group, which doesn't describe us all. Can we use a gender neutral term? Which I think is wonderful.
Yeah, it gives you kind of phrases that you can try to have stick in your pocket and are helpful to pull out.
Yeah. And you can do a little prep work, like Heidi mentioned. So if you know that that's like a sensitive topic for you, come prepared, come with notes, right?
And it's always okay to go take a breath to go refer back to those. Like, the bathroom break is my favorite tool.
Yeah.
Or you mentioned like, oh, hey, I think I left something in my car. I got to go check. Like, it's okay to find ways, even if there's not something you specifically want to respond to, just to take time for yourself to like,
Yeah. Or, oh, let me go grab the rolls out of the kitchen. Okay. Really quickly, since we were so excited about this topic, making room for grief. So you mentioned earlier how you had a prayer moment. Maybe you set an empty spot at the table. You put the plate down. This is grandma's spot. I've seen people bring stuff in or tell stories, you know, just allowing for that. We recognize holidays are hard if you're missing somebody. Remember that this is going to pass. Christmas may feel like it's 40 hours stuck in this moment forever kind of thing, but tomorrow's going to come and it'll be a new day. So don't lose sight of that if you can. I like to tell myself I only have 5 minutes left, or, you know, I only have to do this three more times, or whatever you've got. So after the holidays, self-care.
Yeah, just whatever it is, ways to take care of yourself. There's a lot of great resources online. I really love something called the self-care wheel, which talks about different elements of your well-being with self-care. So and plan for it. Like, set yourself an acupuncture appointment, or make a date with a friend to do that one thing that you know you really love. And so you have something to look forward to as well. And you know that time's coming.
Yeah. So self-care send-off. We're going to, you know, wrap it up here. So make a holiday plan would be my self-care for this month. What would you like to share?
So one thing I'm trying to do is, I know especially I have seasonal depression. So as it gets darker at night, I often get sucked into my phone more and more and more and less likely to do things. So a self-care goal I'm setting for myself, attempting to set a cutoff time for me where I'm no longer going to be on my phone and no longer do social media. So I'm trying. It's pretty late right now. I'm going to try and push it back right now. 10:30 phone goes down, and even if I'm not going to go to sleep, then I'm just going to read books for the rest of the night. And I don't always stick to it, but just having a cutoff time, because otherwise I will get sucked in to that comparing and to that, or even just mindless scrolling. So setting time for myself, where there are boundaries for myself is also really important for me. Yeah.
Okay, great. So I highly recommend you all look up these resources we've mentioned, try to create a plan, and enjoy your holidays as best as you can. So thank you all for listening.
Connect with us. We are Dragon Digital Radio.